Oliver Callan on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by It's for Women. Discover female health insurance through It's for Women.
Okay, now, did you know a fellow Talaman, stopped the French Beret from becoming extinct? Well, he did, and his name is Mark Saunders. He has rescued not one, but two historic French hat manufacturing companies and recently took over British hat makers Christie's Hats, and he's on the line to tell us all about it. Hello, Mark.
Hello, Brandon. How are you?
I'm very good, Mark. Good to talk to you. And you're talking to me from France, yeah?
I'm sitting on a terrace in the sunshine, yeah, in France.
Well, so are we, Mark. So are we.
Oh, well, I hope it lasts.
It won't. You know it won't. Of course it won't. That's probably why you moved there. So your career in the hat industry started in France. How did you end up in France?
My French wife. I met a French lady. And she tried to live in Dublin with me for a couple of years, but she was always complaining about it being dark too early in the winter and missing the mountains and missing blue sky. And I never really got what she was on about, in fairness, until she left me. And I had no choice but to move to France or get divorced.
Okay.
So I took the plunge and moved to France, and now I do get it.
Yeah, don't we all? So where in France do you live?
I'm living right now in a town called Chinon, which is more or less right bang in the middle of France. But I spent the last 25 years down the southwest of France, in what they call the Basque Country, which is of course where the Beret has its origins.
Okay, very good. So give us a little bit of context about how you got into hat making.
Okay. When I first got to France, I was 26 and I couldn't speak a word of French.
Really?
So. Difficult to get a job. Yeah, I said she literally left me, overnight. So it was a quick move without much planning involved. But yeah, I couldn't speak a word of the language, so I got myself a job as a barman, working the evenings in an Irish pub, of course. So my English, I could use English a little bit, but during the day I was free. And where I was living then was right at the foot of the mountains. And I discovered skiing and snowboarding at that stage during the day. So I taught myself to ski during the day, and I was having a ball. But I absolutely loved it, and I fell in love with the mountains. And I just said to myself, Mark, how can you find a job where you can ski as much as possible and make a living? Mm-hmm. And that's when I decided to make my own beanie brand, my own ski hat brand.
Beanie, the little woolly hats, small woolly hats, yeah. For skiing. Yeah, very good.
Yeah, little woolly hats. This is a time when skiers were not wearing helmets. We were all just wearing woolly hats, and the hell with it. So I did that basically, and it was almost by accident really. We just one day on the slopes looking around, what can I do? And I saw these hats, so I did some research, found some factories that could help me make these things in China. And I went out and started trying to get orders, writing orders with these selling these designs. I only had drawings at the time of the beanies, so I went out showing drawings to people. But amazingly enough, I ended up selling about, I think it was 26,000 of them.
Wow!
Pre-season, before people even saw them, just believing my spiel and looking at drawings, they actually placed orders for the following winter. So I had these 26,000 units sold, and I had no money, unfortunately, at the time. So I had to try and find a Chinese factory that would give me a break and give me some credit.
Yeah.
Because normally you actually pay up front when you're making this kind of stuff. So
I didn't have
that money.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I found a Chinese person who just opened his first factory at the time. And since then, we've been long friends now. It's been many years where we've been working together over the years through different projects, but always in hats.
Okay.
But Jeffrey and myself now, we're two of the old timers now in the hat business worldwide.
So
we know each other very well.
The dream, as it were, happened in 2007. Is that right? You were purchased.
I did. In 2007, I was purchased by Cangall, the British American brand.
Yeah,
they're based out of New York, Pennsylvania, in New York. And I worked with those guys up until 2012. And at the time, I obviously knew what was going on in the hat business, and I knew that there was two French beret factories at the time supplying the French tourist market and the French army and so on. One of them closed down, and it was a sad moment for us all in our hat business. But in 2012, the second one, the last one, was in trouble. And at that stage, I'd had a few more years behind me. I'd made a little bit of money, and I was in a position where I could possibly help out. And when I just thought about France having no beret factory, it just seemed wrong. It just seemed really odd and wrong. And I seemed to be the only person to give a damn at the time about it.
So this company is called Lulair, is that how you say it?
Lulair. There's actually another pronunciation for it, but it'd be too complicated. Okay. Lulair.
We'll take Lulair.
It was originally the Lulair family that had the factory. They've been around since 1840, I think it is.
Wow.
They're an old operation, but when I stepped in, there was only 16 people left in the building. They had no idea who owned the company, what was going to happen to them, but they refused to leave the factory. They refused us to shut the machines down. And it was just a really touching moment for me when I got in there. I think that's one of the reasons that really helped me motivate me when I got in there, because there was a hell of a lot of work to do. So I got in there and these people were just like,
sorry, just on that, that's a remarkable picture you're painting there. So this factory has lost a lot of employees, but 16 core members stay in this factory, right? And so
they refuse to move,
They refuse to move. Were they being paid? Had they stopped being paid?
No, they weren't being paid. They had no idea what the future was for them, but they just all felt so passionate about it because they knew if you shut it down, it's not going to open again. That was their philosophy, and they were probably right in reality. And they just hung on. When I came in, they looked. Apparently, I was the third person to take over the company in the last 15 years or so.
So they were skeptical.
They were very skeptical. It was a little bit like a mum who's on her third or fourth husband. Where the kids are like, yeah, we'll call your dad at some stage, but let's just see how it goes. It was a little bit like that, really. They didn't really believe me. Being Irish didn't help, because they're wondering, what is this Irish guy doing in our company? But I think they realised I was probably, I had more to prove, maybe. But I went for it, hell and leather. And gained a lot of people into helping us.
It's an amazing story. But actually, just to give the listeners context, like Lulair, the company, which is like saying Lawler with a French accent, isn't it, basically?
Yeah.
Lulair, they provide the official beret to the French military.
Amongst other militaries, yeah.
That's like, if you put it in that context, that's huge.
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, even the French army were considering buying their berets from China. They were even then they were considering it, and I just shamed them into it. And being Irish helped a lot, because I would just tell them, if the fact that an Irishman is talking to you right now, it doesn't bother you, there's something wrong. There's something seriously wrong. And that was my argument with most of these institutions. I had the same thing with the Eiffel Tower and the Louvre and other, you know, iconic French or Parisian touristic sites. Mm-hmm. They were all also selling Chinese berets, and I did the same thing with those guys, which wasn't easy because they were buying these Chinese berets for like €2 and selling them for 20. It was a major moneymaker for them. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm asking them to buy something for 20 and sell it for 40, and they were skeptical about it, but even they were happy in the end, because tourists were happier to buy a proper French beret when they're on holiday rather than a Chinese. I'm not against Chinese berets now, but they're just not the same quality. And it's not about that. It's about protecting local manufacturing.
Yeah, of course. That's exactly what it's about. So the French pretty much had fallen out of love with the beret at the time, hadn't they? They'd seen that the French guy with the moustache and the beret and the onions and the Breton stripe on a bike. So they'd seen it as the beret became a sort of a caricature of French people.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. When I hit the market, I had one communication for the world market, and then I had another communication for the French market.
Oh, what?
Two entirely different conversations they were.
Oh, wow.
The reason was that the Japanese, the Americans and the Australians, they saw the French beret as Parisian chic. They saw it as a fashion item, and they loved it. There was no convincing to be done there. But the French, as you said, they saw it as a kind of mocking caricature. Every time the British or the Americans made a TV show about France, they had some idiot with a beret, and it just kind of embarrassed the French people. So my communication with France was, guys, you don't believe how lucky you are. You've got a beautiful iconic hat that's instantly recognizable around the world. Be proud, use it, lean into it. And it took a bit, but I got lucky, because a lot of the press and some of the TV shows got behind me, and I managed to get quite a lot of promotional promotional, you know, promotions for it on television.
This is great. This would make a great movie, Mark. Do you know that? This would make a great movie.
Oh my God.
Irishman in France. Come here. You're making me think. So where did the berry actually come from? There's the million-dollar question for you.
Well, legends have it that it was the shepherds who worked in the mountains, in the Pyrenees mountains. They discovered the felting process by accident. Basically, wool falling onto the ground in the manger, the sheep stomping on it with water and other things. And they noticed that when you stomp on wool, it actually fuses together and becomes a solid piece.
Oh.
So they decided they just used wool. And then used the new discovered felting system where they just stomped on it in water. And then the wool will contract and become a dense piece. And when they did that, they realized that it was actually waterproof. So they made hats. The original berry wasn't exactly the same shape as it is today because it was rudimentary and it was made by hand. But that's basically where the legend states that it came from. And that's going back to like 1050 or something. It was a long time ago.
And I think actually, if you can tie that narrative into your message, it becomes almost impossible to not love it, right? Particularly if you're French.
Oh my God! Yeah, you know, I was very hardcore at the time. It's been a few years now. I left that factory back in 2020 to take on the next challenge. But I lived and breathed berets for 8 years. To make it happen. To change the context for the French, what we did was we opened up a beautiful store in Paris in the famous Faubourg Saint-Honoré Avenue, mm-hmm. where we had our store right in between Gucci and Prada. Yeah. We opened the store there. It was a massive gamble because it cost over $1 million to open the store. But that gave us the standing that the French were kind of you know, waiting for. When they saw the French beret on that avenue in Paris, it kind of changed slowly, it changed their opinions on the thing. I then opened up four or five other pure beret stores just selling berets.
Wow. I've got a text here, Mark, that says there were berets worn in Ireland as part of the national dress. They were a little different to the French design and they were called barade os Gaelic. Did you know that?
I didn't know that. I knew that was the case in Scotland, so it doesn't surprise me if the Celtics were you know, a couple behind that. And it was probably found by accident, the same as on the French side, on the same story. I wouldn't be surprised if it was the same story.
Listen, Mark, you're definitely the man with the Midas touch, and particularly when it comes to millinery. Thank you so much for taking our call, and have a gorgeous weekend. Thank you.
Let's take a break. You too, man. Take care, guys. Have a lovely weekend, everybody.
Thank you. Let's take a break.
Bye bye.